Hi everybody, welcome back to EDF Action Campaign Academy. We are thrilled today to present GeoTV to you guys. The end is coming soon. We have Luis Avila here, who is a total expert in GeoTV. He is a senior advisor with 270 Strategies. He was recently with Stand for Children. He is on the national board of La Raza. He has loads of campaign experience, and we're just so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much, Morgan. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share with you some information about GeoTV today. I want to start by sharing a little bit of a story, because that's how I always like to start trainings. What happened, I like to share why I got involved. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm originally from Mexico. Moved here about 18 years ago to the U.S. Actually, this is the year that I've been sharing this with people. This is a year that I've been in the country for half of my life. So it's a pretty daunting year, an interesting year, where you look back and look forward and try to figure out what's going to happen. But it's very well connected to my story, actually, because when I arrived here in the country, about a few months later, I started hearing about this thing called Prop 200, or Prop, sorry, it was Prop 204. And I kept seeing signs. In Mexico, we don't have propositions in the ballot, so I didn't know what it was. But I kept hearing that it was something about bilingual education. And my brother and my sister were moving here from Mexico too. So I started asking around in school, what was Prop 204? This guy at school introduced me to Gaspar, an organizer. I didn't know what an organizer was, but he said, Gaspar knows everything about propositions, you should ask him. Gaspar was an older man who was organizing workers at the university to try to figure out how to get them unionized. And in that conversation, Gaspar told me that Prop 204 was about eliminating or making English the official language of Arizona and making it against the law to speak any other language in the classroom. So I got kind of, that was really weird for me because my brother and sister were just coming from Mexico and I knew that they didn't speak English. So I thought, what are they going to do? So there was this huge campaign to try to verify the signatures for the proposition in the ballot. And I became such a hardcore volunteer that I started kind of leading the process of taking signatures out and traveling in other parts of the state. They gathered enough signatures. It's the law now in Arizona. But I learned a lot about the electoral process back then. And I learned also that these decisions that we make in one election impact the lives of many, many students. To this date, 18 years later, it's still against the law to speak any other language that is not English in the classroom. And it's affected a lot of Spanish-speaking kids and refugee kids from other countries. It makes it a lot harder for them to catch up. It makes their language something that it's unimportant or as if it's a wrong thing to do. And many research studies have shown that these kids kind of actually grow up with some type of resentment against the language of their family or against the language of their that they learned first. So since then, I started getting involved in elections. Many, many elections, from school board races in different parts of the country to propositions, governor's races, presidential campaigns. And one of the most important things that I've learned is that we have to be ready. We have to be prepared. Even when we think that we're ready, even when we think we were prepared, things happened to throw us off. So what we're going to do today actually is going to be talking a little bit about GeoTV, or a lot about GeoTV, which means get out the vote. So many people say that they hear GeoTV all the time. You win campaigns like to use acronyms, and we like to use sometimes language that, you know, not everybody understands. We have to make sure that we always say what things mean so people understand, volunteers, people around us. GeoTV means get out the vote. Again, my name is Luis Avila. My Twitter handle is Finiquera. You can see it on the screen. And you can always reach out. People reach out to me on Twitter all the time asking questions. So you can always reach out and ask questions. I would love to hear from you and the campaigns that you're working on. So this module, what we're going to learn is that we're going to explain the reason for and the importance of GeoTV. So why do we actually separate GeoTV from the rest of the campaign? Why is that important? Sorry. The second thing we're going to learn about is the outline of the typical GeoTV structure. So how does it look like during GeoTV on grassroots campaigns, and what is the best way for us to structure those? Finally, we're going to introduce the components of an effective GeoTV operation. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about how do you actually execute the GeoTV. So what is GeoTV? I want you to actually think about it. How would you separate GeoTV from other parts of the campaign? Why do we do it? What does it look like? So I'm going to give you a couple of seconds to just think about, what is GeoTV? Why do we do it? And what does it look like? The reason I'm giving you a couple of seconds to write up about this is because I want you to be able to actually talk to other people about GeoTV and be able to explain it. Why do we do it? And what does it look like? Now, we're going to learn those things in this training, but I'm going to give you a couple of seconds to just write down. I know it's not enough time, but I wanted to give you a little bit of silence to write something. And we're going to learn more into it, so let's dive into it. Well, it comes down to this. Will our list vote? So we have a list of supporters, right? People usually say that it's 50% plus one. That's the win number, right? I actually lately say we during GeoTV should shoot for more than that plus one. I keep thinking that our elections lately have been so uncertain, and they are we just don't have a very, very good grasp of the results on elections. Some people are more excited than others. We're seeing turnout in places that we haven't seen, some of it great for our causes, some of it great for our organizations, and some of it not so great. So I think it's important for us to make sure that we think about who is on our list, and we're going to talk a little bit more about who is on our list and why and how do we make sure that our voters in our list turn out. Now, if you don't have a list during GeoTV, that means that you didn't do the previous work that we had to, right? The work of capacity building or identifying voters, right? Most of us probably during our campaign talked to a bunch of voters and asked them if they were supporting our candidate or our cause, right? So we asked them, you know, would you vote for X candidate or would you support X proposition or X ballot initiative? During that phase of capacity building or identification, we're able to actually identify voters who will be then supporters. And we usually also in campaigns have a persuasive or persuasion phase, which is a phase when we talk to voters to convince them to support our cause. That doesn't mean we talk to people who are against our cause, but we talk to people who are undecided or who are in between. Sometimes there might be people who actually support our candidate or support our cause, but they don't even know if they're going to vote yet. So persuasion, it's about actually adding more people to our list. And then finally, GeoTV, it's about churning out those people, the ones who said, yes, I'm excited to vote for your candidate, and yes, you convinced me to vote for your candidate or cause. So GeoTV, it's actually huge, a huge amount of goals and really high stakes. If you think about it, GeoTV is the last push of a campaign. So it's a massive operation. And in order to be effective, it must be structured, organized, and efficient. Why? Because we usually, during GeoTV, knock on more doors, make more phone calls, and have more activity than the whole campaign altogether. So we're going to talk about what is the time frame for GeoTV, because it changes for every state. But let's say that in your state, GeoTV is the last 4 days of election. Let's say that the majority of voters in your state vote in the last 4 days of election. During those 4 days, you're probably going to have to talk to your voters as many times as possible. And you're going to have an operation that is so massive that it's almost as if you are going to do the level of activity that you did for months in just 4 days. So that is why GeoTV is so intense, so high stakes, and it's so important. So if we're not well organized, if we're not well structured, if we're not efficient, then what will happen is that we will probably fail, in those 4 days. And if we fail in those 4 days, we failed election. So let's pay a lot of attention in the next conversation, next piece of this conversation, to think about how do we structure well. So how is GeoTV different from other phases of the campaign? I think I shared this, but one thing that I'm gonna tell you is that during GeoTV, there are a lot of surprises. So I'm gonna tell you something. This is my personal opinion. I'm not saying you have to do this, but during GeoTV, and actually even before GeoTV, leading to GeoTV, I have a rule in my professional career as a campaigner. I actually do not look at polls in the last few days. I actually do not watch the news in the last few days. And I try to stick just and focus what's happening on the ground. Are we hitting our goals? Do we have enough volunteers? Do we have enough people in the right places and the right roles? Do I talk more often to my staff? I talk more often to my volunteer leads. I talk more often to the data people, the digital people, communications. Because for me, it is more important to be focused on what I know is gonna win the campaign than on the political stuff that sometimes it's happening. Usually in large campaigns, there are political staff that can take care of that. If you don't have political staff in your organization and you are leading field, I really recommend that you separate the political and the field operation. And that is my opinion, because if you don't, then what happens is that you get distracted by what's happening on the news or what's happening on your Twitter feed. And I try to be disciplined on focusing on the goals that I have in front of me. I know that I need X amount of voters to turn out, and I need to focus on turning out those voters. And I know that if I talk to them at the door, I have a really high chance of turning them out. So I try my best to not get distracted. And I have this rule of not checking news or polls the last 4 days. I know there are gonna be campaigners out there, they're gonna be rolling their eyes and gonna be like, what are you talking about? That is what I do, and it always works for me. At the end of the day, I hit my goals and I do well. But this is what is different also about GeoTV. As I said, leading to the campaign, we're usually pretty stable on the numbers of call of doors or phone calls or media hits or any metrics that you have in your campaign. During the last 4 days of GeoTV or the last month of GeoTV for some states, it ramps up. We call this a hockey stick. It looks like a hockey stick. You know, it ramps up immediately in the weeks leading up to GeoTV. So if you have only 10 volunteers at the beginning of the campaign and you remain with 10 volunteers all throughout GeoTV, you probably won't be able to hit your goals, because these 10 volunteers will probably have to do four times more the work that they were doing a few weeks before. So GeoTV, it's a time where you have to already be built. You already have to have a time, you already have to have the capacity at your maximum. So here in Arizona, for example, we are working on GeoTV because in October, people start voting early. So from now to the beginning of October, we are actually recruiting more volunteers, talking to more people, because we know that we will need all of those people in October. But if we don't do it today, we won't be able to train them, to get them ready, and to start kind of like dry running, which I'm going to talk a little bit about as well. So let's talk a little bit about how structure changes during a campaign. And I apologize that I'm coughing, but I have a little bit of a cold, but I wanted to make sure that we did this training because it's GeoTV season. So I'm going to drink a little bit of water. So the structure changes, I said. The first part of the structure is what we call neighborhood team roles, right? Some of these roles, some of these teams you've been building for months, some of them you probably have been built for over a year. There are people who are leaders in your community, people you recruited. For example, in my case, I've been recruiting people for my campaign here in Arizona for over a year and a half. You know, after the last presidential election, a lot of people were really excited, and we capitalized on that by connecting them to issues around the legislature, issue advocacy issues, and now they are so fired up about the election that we worked with them for a while, and now they're leaders, right? So some of them are neighborhood team leaders that are actually located in specific areas of the state. In your case, it could be in specific areas of your state, your district, your city, right? And usually what we try to think about is that these neighborhoods team leaders are placed in areas where we need to build capacity, right? So we need to place neighborhood team leaders or recruit neighborhood team leaders where we know we need more capacity. So under that, we know that we have phone bank captains, right? Phone bank captains, canvas captains, and data captains that have as part of their teams people that they recruited, right? So the phone bank captain probably has a bunch of phone bankers that support their phone calls. The canvas captain probably has a bunch of canvassers, and the data person probably usually has a few data people who help them with data entry, data analysis, etc. During GeoTV, the operation is larger. Why? Because as I said, remember, we probably had to do the same, like four times the activity than we were doing in a month in just 4 days, or sometimes in just 1 week. So that's why we need a better structure. So instead of neighborhood team leaders, we call them staging location directors. And staging location directors are usually highly organized. They're usually people who are your best volunteers, the people who you know are gonna show up, the people who are not gonna let you down, the people who you know are super committed to the campaign, and that they're coachable, right? So the way that I call it is that they're committed, that they have time to give, not that they have time available, but they have time to give. Even busy people have time to give. So never make the assumption of someone that you might think is too busy. Make the question, actually ask the question, can you make the time? And the third one is that the person is coachable. That's important for me. If I have a staging location director who thinks that they know everything and they don't want to take coaching from me, then usually that person is not going to be a great staging location director, because that person is probably going to be doing their own thing. So staging location directors are critical because they're going to be actually running a place that from where we are going to be making phone calls, we're going to be canvassing, we're going to be checking polling locations, et cetera. So let's talk a little bit about who the staging location actually supervises. The staging location director supports or oversees a phone bank captain, right? And they basically do the same that the other phone bank captain did in the other leader role. But in this location, the phone bank lists changes very often. So sometimes we might be calling a list in the morning, 9 a.m. And then by 11, we already changed the list and the script. So the phone bank captain has to be super quick on training people, has to be super organized as well. And they have to be able to keep people on the phone, right? So we all have volunteers that come and make phone calls and they just make a couple, but then the rest of the time they're socializing around the office. The phone bank captain usually is someone who can have direct conversations and can tell a volunteer like, hey, you know, it really helps if we're making phone calls. We're in the last few days. Please help me out here. Or if you don't want to make phone calls, can you help me out? We do this other thing. I always try to find phone bank captains who can actually be direct, be nice, of course, and be very good trainers. The second one is canvas captains. So canvas captains for me are one of the most critical positions that we have in a staging location. Now, what is a staging location, you might be thinking now? A staging location could be any place. Sometimes it could be a garage. Like in the last campaign I was involved, most of our staging locations were houses, volunteers' houses that they opened for us to stage the launch of the campaign from there. They are smaller operations, right? They usually have a couple dozen people at the most. Sometimes that's where they take volunteers if they are in another location. One really cool thing about staging locations is that they allow you to decentralize your canvassing. So if you are making phone calls, you can make phone calls from anywhere. But if you're knocking on doors, you want to make sure that you're as close to the turf as you can be. I was just talking to a campaigner yesterday who every day he's wasting an hour and a half of driving from the staging location where they have to the turf. So imagine an hour and a half when we know that each canvasser could knock on a couple dozen doors in that hour, on a few, probably like 40 doors they could knock in during that time frame. Imagine wasting 10 canvassers on a daily basis and their time for an hour and a half. We're basically leaving doors at the table. So having staging locations closer to the turf, it's critical for us. And these campus captains are going to make it all happen because they're going to be training, they're going to be super organized, and they're going to have their turf in order. They're going to know what literature needs to go. And they're going to also be really good at reporting because we need to be reporting this information as soon as possible. The third one is polling places, captains. And usually these individuals are people who are going around polling locations in your community and checking if everything is okay. Let me give you another example. In the primary, in the last primary, about 20, close to 20 polling locations in Phoenix were actually shut down. They didn't open on time because they had some issues with their counting machines, and they had some issues with their vendors. So we had hundreds of voters who were going to these polling locations and they couldn't vote. So our polling place captains actually were able to redirect them to an open polling location where anybody could go and print a ballot and vote. Some of them were, you know, 15 minutes, 10 minutes away. So we had to make sure we gave them information, we directed them right. But also we found out about the closure of the polling locations because our polling place captains were there. So when they called us in the morning and they told us they're not opening on time, we told the phone bank captain to start making phone calls in those areas and tell people that the polling location was closed, but that they should go to another one so they wouldn't waste their time. We also directed our canvassers to go knock on doors of those areas, so we were able to redirect people. That's why working in synchronization, it's really, really critical here. Polling place captains are usually people who are very good communicators and who are also, I would call them entrepreneurial. They are good at being on their own, and they're good at, you know, reaching out and building relationships with other people so they could ask questions. If you're gonna put a super shy person in a polling location captain, you're gonna ask someone who is not gonna ask questions or who, you know, it's afraid of asking others for things. It might not be the best role for that person because we sometimes need polling place captains to actually be a little more outgoing, a little more pushy, if you will, and ask questions and report directly. Finally, the comfort captain. This is my favorite role, and that is just because I am a social person. But comfort captains are people who actually take care of all the logistics of the day that have to do with making sure that everybody is actually doing well. So what I mean by that is, for example, the story of Nita. Nita is one of my closest and dearest volunteers and friends during a campaign. We have a really strong friendship, even though we met in 2007. Nita was our comfort captain, so she would make sure that, you know, coffee was there in the morning when everybody arrived, that we had enough water for everyone, that lunch was ordered, so that we didn't have distractions during the day, right? One thing that often happens is that people say, oh, it's lunchtime, we gotta go have lunch. And then they take 2 hours or, you know, whatever time out of the office instead of making phone calls or knocking on doors. So Nita or phone on any comfort captain, what they really do is that they really help us actually have people fed, water, you know, that they are comfortable, that they're doing well, that we have, you know, and the minimal medical equipment there, you know, if someone, you know, has a paper cut or whatever, that they can be taken care of. Again, you can always reach out to me on Twitter and ask me questions. Phone bank captain, campus captain, polling place captain, and comfort captain. They all have volunteers under them, of course, phone bankers, canvassers, sometimes polling place volunteers. So at the time when they close, for example, the polling locations, they have volunteers there encouraging people to, if there's a line, to not leave, and comfort captains, of course, picking up the food, etc. All right, during the GOTV phase, everybody is organizing, everyone. So one thing that I don't like is that campaigns that are working in silos. So if I'm working on a campaign, and sometimes I've been invited to help out in campaigns at the end, and when I arrive and I see that everybody's on their own thing, it immediately raises a flag for me that the campaign is probably not well integrated. To be well integrated, everybody has to have some type of role that is related to these roles that you have in front of you. So I spoke about political, right? People who are taking care of the political situation. In the last presidential campaign, for example, people were starting to, volunteer were starting to say, oh, you know, we have it in the bag. We're not gonna go campaign, we're not gonna volunteer this weekend because we're hearing that the polls are really strong in support of our candidate. So, you know, I'm gonna stay in my community and canvass or phone bank for this other candidate. And, you know, the political people actually told us, hey, you know, we are actually hearing that there are a lot of stuff happening politically that might impact the outcome of the election. So they told us about an announcement that the then FBI director made. And we were actually able to reach out to volunteers and say, like, hey, things are not fine. Like, you shouldn't be thinking that everything is already well. We need you. We need you as volunteers. And sometimes political gave us tips, right? Like of things that were happening on the news or things that were happening that people were hearing, so we could, you know, answer questions. Sometimes also people from the local community, right? Like local politicians would arrive on a polling location and be like, I want to be here. I want to have a press conference, and that would take time away from our staff that were doing door knocking or phone banking. So our political staff or our political person was able to actually intervene and take care of this elected official, and you know, still make him feel important and make him feel happy without taking away from the very important work that we're doing of contacting voters. The second one is training. We need training people in our campaigns. One of the biggest reasons why people stay in campaigns is because they are trained well. So they build relationships during the campaign, but when they come, one of their first experiences are training. So I make sure that training people have really good information, really good quality content. Digital, of course, someone who could be at a staging location who could post on the social media, inviting people to come over, a press. We don't need probably press in every staging location, but we need press to people or media communications people to be supporting staging locations in case the media wants to show up, which they always do. And finally, data. I don't know how you are going to be doing GeoTV in your campaigns, but in the worst case scenario, which is why my last case in the last campaign, we have to strike everyone with a marker every night because they were voting early. And instead of reprinting every night, we were just striking the voters who voted because we would check the county at night. So sometimes we were at 1 or 2 in the morning striking voters. this was thanks to the data team that were telling us who were already out of the roll, and our team of volunteers and staff were able to do the striking. So just think about it. The data team is actually helping us reduce our list, and it's also helping us get better at targeting. So who are we targeting? Who is in the GeoTV universe? So I talked about a little bit about the persuasion, right? The capacity building. So this is what we're talking about when we're talking about GeoTV universe. You know, these three buckets that you see on your image are probably not the same size. They're the same size for this slide, but usually these buckets tend to change in size. So the persuadable voters, for example, are the people, and again, these are not people who are against our candidate and we're gonna convince otherwise, right? These are candidates, these are voters who haven't made a decision. They either haven't made a decision about voting for our candidate or our cause, or they haven't made a decision if they're gonna vote. So those are actually are equally important. Sometimes we go to a door and people tell us like, I don't know if I'm gonna vote. Those are the people we need to persuade. So persuadable voters are people who we should know already that we need to go back to their door, either because we talked to them before and they told us that they weren't going to vote, or they weren't thinking about it, or that they didn't know who they were going to vote for. These persuadable voters are critical for the success of your campaign. So if you have a data person in your organization, make sure that you are talking about who are our persuadable voters, have we been tracking, how many of them are there, when are we going to talk to them. Second one is sporadic voters, so people who vote sometimes. In this election, sporadic voters are especially critical. Why? Because we're seeing an increase of voter participation of young people, for example. We're seeing an increase in voter participation of women. We're seeing an increase of voter participation of communities of color. So it's really critical for us to think about who are sporadic voters in the universe that sometimes might or might not vote and we want to talk to, right? So they could be anyone, but you should check on their track record, right? Did they vote in the last election? Sometimes we focus only on the ones who vote all the time. And then what that does is that we're just competing for the same pool of voters. We need to expand our list by talking to voters who sometimes vote, so we can actually get them to be more consistent voters. We've been doing a lot of research for years, and we know that people who vote sometimes are more willing to vote if you talk to them again. Than if you don't. So that is a chance for us to go back to them and say, hey, you voted, you didn't vote last time, but you can vote this time, right? Or this is a very important election for us to participate in. It's really easy to vote. Come up, I'll help you. And the last one is supportive voters. So people who already told you that they were going to support your candidate or that they were going to support your cause. So if you think about it, if you add all these three universes, they're going to be the win. They're going to give you the win number. They should give you the win number. So that is the kind of question I would ask my data person. How many persuadable voters, how many sporadic voters, and how many people from our base are we going to get out? Does that give us a win number? So who are our GOTV targets? Well, one tier one target, we believe that it's very, very important, are people who usually turn out. So let's say that they vote two or three times out of the four, right? So in the last four elections, they voted two or three times. That means that they probably have a median turnout. And we're going to talk about, we're going to call them tier one because they also have high support. They're really supportive of our campaign or our cause. Tier two are people who have very high support and very high turnout. We are calling them, and these are in the yellow area of your slide. Why are they tier two and not tier one, you might ask? Why are you talking to them after the medium turnout? Well, because the medium turnout people need a little bit more support in order for them to go out. So we need to talk to them more often. The people who always vote, and we know that are supportive of our candidate, will probably vote. Probability says that they're going to vote again, and that they're going to vote for a candidate if they already told us. So we will talk to them, but we will probably talk to the ones who need a little push first. Those who are high supporters who say, yes, I'm voting for your candidate because I'm really mad right now, or because I love your candidate, or I love your cause, but they don't always vote, we're also going to talk to them. You can see them to the left, where it says tier two in light blue. But we'll probably talk to them after we talk to the medium turnout people. And finally, tier two are people who we know they sometimes vote, and they sometimes, and then we know that they are kind of lukewarm about our candidate or cause, and we need to talk to them and convince them and persuade them. Tier three are people who not always vote, but they told us, yeah, I kind of like you, right? So we want to talk to them to persuade them to move them to the high support. And finally, tier three of high turnout are people who we know are going to vote, but they are not super excited yet about our candidate. They like us, but they are not super excited yet. So we need to talk to them again to persuade them to support our candidate. Finally, we do not talk to the people who do not support us. We do not talk to the people who say, I don't like your candidate. We don't try to convince those people because we know that if we talk to the other folks and we do a good job turning them out, we'll win if that's what our data tells us. Now, if you have more time in the next cycle, for example, you might do some work with these low support people, but for GOTV, you don't talk to the people in the low support area. And have a conversation with your data people about, who are these individuals? And if you don't have a data person, try to think about, have we been able to support these individuals in our last phases of the campaign? All right, let's talk about the GOTV timeline. So, when is GOTV? Well, let me tell you something. It changes everywhere. Historically, people have said that GOTV is on the final 4 days of the campaign. So the final 4 days, that means the Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday of the campaign, right? So you do everything you can on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday to get ready for Tuesday. But I will tell you that in many states, that's changed. For example, here in Arizona, where I live, over 50% of voters vote by mail over the month of October, and about 12-14% of them vote early, so they go to early voting locations. So then at the end of the day, election day, we have about 16-20% of voters we have to talk to. But now we only have 4 days to talk to them, so it's really, really important that we are prepared and we are well organized for those 4 days. But think about if you're in the place where you live, you're voting early, you're early voting, or if you have early voting, when does it start? Because that's when the election starts. Well, that's when GOTV starts. So this, depending on where your state is, if you have early voting, if you have vote by mail, if you have a grace period of voting, you should check that out because election day might only be a portion of your voters. And we think that GOTV, it's only on election day when people already voted in the whole time. I'm going to give you a really quick example of that. A few months ago, I was talking to a county recorder in another state, and they were telling me that they opened about 40 new polling locations for early voting during the primary. But that most organizations actually weren't using those early voting locations to turn out voters because they didn't know about it. And I was just super concerned about the fact that our election cycles continue to change, the information continues to change, the people making decisions continue to change, and we're not checking on those changes. So check it out. What are the dates for early voting? What are the dates for voting by mail? How much time do you have to start your GOTV? One really important thing is that early voting, for me, it's a huge opportunity for dry runs. So I start that a month out. So for example, here in Arizona, every weekend of October, which is early voting weekends, we are doing the operation just like as if it was election day. So we're doing dry runs. We're doing reporting in the same structure. We are using the same roles and responsibilities, and we're moving people to vote just as if it was election day. So by election day, we have a very well-oiled machine, and we kind of like got rid of all the kinks of things that didn't work. So what is the potential GOTV timeline? The potential one is early voting, which probably will start about a month before election. Vote by mail, which usually starts about 3 weeks or a month before election. Always counting, remember, that there is a cutoff date for voting by mail, which usually it's a few days before the election so that the ballot can make it on time. And also, I always include a part of the program that those people who didn't send their ballot but have it at home, they can deliver it in person in their polling locations, which is usually the case in most states. So if that is the case, make sure that you develop a training for your canvassers or phone bankers that people can actually deliver those in person. My alarm just sounded, so I have a few more minutes, about 10 more minutes. So I'm going to try to make it through this information so that we can go to questions and answers. And the last thing is the vote on Tuesday, which we've already been talking about. Well, this is an example of a timeline, all right, for GOTV. Phase one could be 2 months before, right? So that's now, right? So voter registration push, are we getting the last people to voter register to voter? Are we contacting people who are sporadics, who sometimes vote but not always? Are we registering people to vote by mail, right? Right now, that should be our whole focus. So those are metrics that I'm talking about, right? So in canvases right now, I'm asking people how many VRs are you getting? How many vote by mails are you getting? How many contacts? How many people do you talk to at the door that were sporadic, right? That is the list that I cut. I also would add here that I also sometimes have commitments to vote during this phase, because that's what also is going to remind people that they committed to vote and it increases the likelihood of voting. In phase two is vote now. That's about a month out, and that is early voting. But mail your ballot and tell about the candidate, right? Vote for this candidate or these candidates or these causes. This is when we're making direct asks, when we're showing images, when we are giving examples of ballots. Phase three, 10 days out, it's early voting, mail in your ballot. So everything, communications, digital, political, everyone, candidates, our surrogates, everybody's talking about the same messages. So that way we can actually be pushing the same thing. And finally, the phase four is vote on Tuesday. So those are the last 4 days of the campaign. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, sorry, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, where we're going to say, vote on Tuesday. Here's where you vote. It's easy. Let us know if you need anything. Let's talk a little bit about GOTV tactics. So how do we get people out to vote? We talked a lot about the why and the how is what we're going to be focusing on now. So GOTV tactics. According to a lot of the research that the Analyst Institute has done, this is for urban populations and mostly for youth. When you talk to people at the door, sorry, it increases their likelihood of voting by 7%. That's a huge increase if you think about it. That is way better than 0%, right? So if you talk to someone at the door, their likelihood of voting increases by 7% at the door. So prioritize canvassing. I know that there are people who don't like canvassing. I'm actually one of the weird ones that love it. Except in Arizona when it's really, really hot in the summer, I still do it, it is difficult. But in your community, voting, contacting people at the doors is going to be critical. So if someone says, no, I don't like canvassing, make sure that you tell them of the importance of it. Make sure that you show them this. You know, the likelihood of people voting, it's 7%, which is pretty good. for phones, it's around 4% if you talk to them and if you have an effective phone call, not if you are like reading from a script when you call. I get calls all the time from candidates and volunteers who are reading from a script, and it just throws me off, right? It just turns me out of like, I'm like, why are they doing this? Commitment cards, they increase voter participation by about 3%. Text messages around 3% too. I love text messaging as a part of an integrated campaign. So I knock your door, you tell me you like the candidate, so I send you a text message saying thank you, and then I send you information about the early voting, and then I send you information about the ballot or the voting in person. Door hangers, it's about 0.7%, so not even 1%. I don't know if you've been to campaigns lately, to canvassing, where you go knock on a door and leave a door hanger and see that there are only three or four door hangers at the door. So people already see those as trash. They are useful, they do help, especially when they say your polling location information, especially when there are races that are not like super big. So for example, races like school boards, county races, city races, they're really, really critical. Door hangers and mail, it's about 3%. So who's gonna be canvassing? Anyone who can canvass should be canvassing and knocking on doors, as I said already. How do you ensure that GOTV tactics produce results? Well, one thing is that training is critical. For me, one of the most important pieces of GOTV is training. But it's important about making it personal, so that every contact at the door, every contact on the phone, it's about making it personal, talking about why it's important for you, the canvasser, the phone banker, that this race turns out the way we want it to turn out. Why do we want are that candidate or that cause? Focus on quality over quantity. So a rushed, forced GOTV conversation is not good. So during GOTV, I pay particular attention on what is the contact rate that we have. And I usually also look very, very closely to how many yeses or, you know, how many commitments are we getting at the door? Because if we're not getting enough or we're not getting a high number, that means that we're rushing through the doors. This is a good flag, right? Remember, one quality conversation, it's as powerful as 10 door hangers. Have a consistent GOTV message. So everybody should be talking about GOTV. You don't want your candidate to have one message, or your communications person, another one, your political person. Everybody should be talking about getting out, build excitement, they have a final case for your candidate. Train well, then practice, practice, practice. So I do trainings all the time for GOTV. I do trainings in preparation for GOTV. I go to the offices, the staging locations. If I notice that the ID numbers are low, I do another training. I do dry runs every weekend. I try to put people in positions that I know are gonna be high stress, high stakes, so I can see how they're gonna perform and see that they're gonna do well. And staff, and these are the staff and volunteer roles during GOTV and election day that I want you to check out, okay? So the GOTV structure is war room or the boiler room. That's where there are people who are just going to be looking at reports, they're just gonna be looking at numbers and making decisions quickly, right? So they are checking or supervising the regional boiler rooms, which are usually people who are in districts. Besides that, there are the field organizers' boiler rooms, which are usually located per regions. And they are staffed by the field organizers. Then there are staging locations where usually, as I was saying, there are houses or union halls or, you know, organizations that open their doors for you. And in there, they're staffed by volunteer leadership, phone bankers, canvassers, polling locations, comfort captains, as I was talking earlier. And then finally, the turf, where the canvassers are, people knocking on doors. So this is the structure where the people are. So we talked about the staging location rules. I'm not going to go over it again. But let's talk about rules of the road. So for GOTV, you have to know your own role. Everybody should know their own role, and everybody should have a role. If there are people who say, I don't know what I'm doing on election day, you don't have a really good operation. Every single person, it doesn't matter if the person's gonna be making signs or the person's gonna be welcoming people from the, to the office, if they're the comfort captain and they're in the boiler room, everybody should know their role. Everybody should have a TikTok, the run of the day, one kind of like minute by minute, what you're gonna be doing for GOTV. Everybody should have those. If you don't have TikToks during your elections, that means you're not very well organized because you haven't thought about everything from reporting times to everything. follow the reporting structure. There's no exceptions. Campaign leadership will make critical decisions. So let me give you one example of that. During election day last time, in the last presidential campaign that I was involved in, there was one polling location that had a really, really long line, and we were keep sending people there, and people were starting to leave the line. So we had to make the really quick decision of calling the canvassers and phone bankers to tell people there was a really long line and that there was another polling location about 5 minutes away from there that they could go vote. So redirecting people there. Those types of decisions need to be quick, and they need to be made at the boiler room. They are not made at the canvasser level or the field organizer level. They're made at the boiler room. Never break the chain of command. These operations are large, so make sure that you don't make decisions on your own. You always check with your supervisor or the person who's in the top of the campaign. This is usually the chain of command we talk about, right? There are canvassers, phone bankers, and volunteers who report to the captains, the canvas captain, the phone bank captain, the front desk captain, who report then to the staging location directors, which are SLDs here, staging location directors, who report to field organizers, who report to regional field directors, to field directors. Now, in some of your campaigns, you might not have all of these roles, but it should look like something like this. From the ground to the region, to the campaign management. All right, so I'm gonna pause here because we're running out of time, and I wanna ask what are your questions for today?
Luis, thank you so much. I particularly appreciate you highlighted the importance of snacks on election day. I am a snack motivated human being, so that was great.
Thank you. No, I mean, this is one of the most important pieces. When the operation runs well, the snacks are around.
Trevor, did you have some questions?
So if you're on a smaller campaign and you can't afford polling, and you how do you figure out who your GOTV universe should be?
So as I talked a little bit about, Trevor, in the conversation, I didn't mention polling when I talked about the three buckets, right? So if you've been doing your job at talking to voters for the last few months, you probably identified who are the people who are with you, right? Who are the supporter base, right? Which the people that we said they were supporter voters. In those conversations, you probably found people who said, I haven't made a decision, I don't know yet. Those are your persuadable voters, right? So you don't need polling for those conversations. You need to make sure that you kind of figure out who are the people who told you that in the conversations. But also there are going to be voters who you vote, you know that they didn't vote in the last midterm election, but they voted in the general, they've never voted in the midterm, right? So we want to talk to those sporadic voters who vote sometimes, because we know that this election is so important, the stakes are so high that we might actually convince them, persuade them to vote. So those are the universes that I will focus on, even if you don't have polling. So I'm answering your question, Trevor?
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. And then kind of a follow-up, you kind of talked about tier one, tier two, tier three. When you're thinking about kind of volunteer operations that might be have limited capacity, how do you figure out when to prioritize moving on from a tier one list to a tier two list? So how many passes, for example, how many passes should you make on a tier one list before you move down to tier two and then tier three?
So one, people always ask me how many passes are a good amount of passes. I always say it depends on your resources, right? If you have limited resources and you could only do one pass is better than no pass, right? So I always say tier one, you have to go through your tier one people in order to move to your tier two and do another pass of your tier two. I usually stop at tier two and try to see where are we with the level of identification of people that are supporting us before I move to tier three, because you want to expand the electorate. And remember, I'm thinking about here at the door, but you also should be thinking about the touches you do on the phone, the touches you do on mail, the touches you do on digital. So your whole campaign should be talking often with the data team about how we talk to them in any shape or form, right? How we talk to them on the phone, how we talk to them on the door, how we talk to them on media, on digital. But I recommend at a minimum one pass for each one of the tiers, and then go back to tier one again. Tier one is the most critical one, because that's the one that if you persuade them, they'll deliver, right? So I spend more time on tier one than anything else. And if I need to do another pass, I do it at tier one. If I need to do a third pass, I do it at tier one, and then I move to tier two and then tier three. Does that make sense?
Great. And I think I have one last question. And that's like, when you're thinking about coming up with a DOTV script for kind of phones and doors, what are the main components that you want to include in a script for GOTV?
Trevor, that's a great question. So one thing is that we should think about every research study that we've done about voters tell us that people think that voting is really difficult and that they're afraid of making the wrong decision. So when we're talking to them, scripts should make voting easy. It should make voting fun. It should make voting something that they're going to be doing in an easy way. If we are saying things like, oh my God, voting is super complicated, you're already kind of like shooting yourself on the foot. It should be a script that says where their voting location is, where their polling location is, ask them to make a plan, which is really critical. So the research shows that when we are asking voters, hey, can you tell us at what time are you voting? So a really good conversation to have at the door or on the phone is to ask people, are you voting on Tuesday? If the person says yes, is to say, are you voting in the morning or the afternoon? Well, I'm voting before going to work. And then if you ask the person, are you going there walking or are you going in your car? Oh, no, I'm going to go on my way to work, so probably I will stop in my car. Oh, great, so you're going to go by yourself. Yeah, I'm going by myself. What I just did there, Trevor, is that I helped the person imagine and plan in their head what they're going to be doing on election day, right? So I also tag it on my database, and I'm able to go back in the morning and call you, Trevor, and say, like, hey, you told us you're voting this morning. Don't forget, right? Like, do you have any questions for us? No, is there anything we can help you with? Oh, my car broke down. I might need a ride, right? So that's the type of stuff that we need to be ready for. If the person says, I'm going to do it after work, then we have the whole day to be bugging them, right? Like text message them, go to their house, call them, and make sure that they do it. So making a plan to vote is a great part of a script. Making it sound easy and making sure that people know that we are there to help them make the decision, because there's so much stuff in the ballot that sometimes people don't understand and they get paralyzed. And that's a very good example is my mother, Trevor, who every election, she's afraid of voting. So she calls me and she's like, can we walk through the ballot together? And I tell her, what if I wasn't around? What would you do? She's like, I wouldn't vote because I'm afraid of choosing the wrong thing. There's so many people in our communities who think that they're going to vote for the wrong thing against their self-interest, so they'd rather not vote, which actually is harder, right? So we need to make it easy. We need to make it sound like we are there for them, and we need to make sure that they are making a plan when we're asking them questions.
Well, I kind of wanted to jump in here too and follow up on that. So I understand what should be the components of a good, sort of GOTV at the end. Are there any circumstances under which the whole campaign should change or refocus or make a pitch for a different, like something late breaking happens and they change everything?
So one thing, Morgan, I was saying this thing about, I personally like to not be distracted by that in the last few days of the campaign, because I know that I have to talk to enough voters, right? If we are super hypersensitive about everything that happens and we try to change stuff all the time, the message gets diluted. But I do think that there is an important thing to happen in the campaign leadership. So during GOTV and leading to a GOTV, our communication should increase as much as possible. So in GOTV times, I usually have a morning meeting with our team, our campaign leadership, and we check on things like that, right? Like, are there any things that we have to adapt, right? So a good example of that is in New Mexico, I was running a campaign where a bunch of rural communities received flyers saying that because of the high participation of voting, that election was gonna be moved to Wednesday instead of Tuesday, and people were very confused. And it wasn't true. Our opposition always tries to throw wrenches on our process, right? Like either by giving false information, saying that there's going to be raids where there are like areas with high immigrant populations, having people with guns around, police officers around polling locations, stuff like that, that we unfortunately make it more difficult, particularly for vulnerable communities to vote. So what we try to do is to check on those things during GOTV for the polling location captains, for the people who are on the ground. And we try to bring those up and say, do we need to add to the script anything about that, right? Like, do we need to add anything about getting them ready to know, no, election Tuesday, it's always Tuesday, it never changes, that's a lie, right? Or in one election I heard there were flyers at the doors that said that if they hadn't paid their utility bill, they couldn't vote. That was a lie too, right? So this type of information, sometimes we might need to include on the script, but that doesn't mean we change our target list. We don't change our operation. We don't change our roles. We don't change the backbone of our campaign. We might add a thing to the script to address a specific issue, but we never change the strategy because the strategy is always a strategy, regardless if it's this year, next year, or the year before.
I have one more thing, and you touched on this a little bit earlier with the 2016 election. So the availability of polling and data and everybody looking at that kind of stuff all the time made people think the 2016 election was in the bag. There's some of that happening now with people. There's a foregone conclusion about what's going to happen in November. How does a good GOTV operation combat that?
So Morgan, I want to say something that, you know, I think sometimes in these kind of conversations, we want to hear like of a tool or a script or something so concrete, but I'm actually going to say that starts from the leadership of the campaign. And that starts from the message of aspiration and the desire of real change. So to give you an example, Morgan, my mother has lupus, and if Obamacare and the medical programs we have in our state of Arizona right now were taken away, there's no way that we could afford the medical care that my mom needs to have a healthy life. So this election is personal for me. And every time I talk to campusers, every time I talk to volunteers, every time I talk to our leadership, I say, there's no way anything is in the back because I'm not going to put my mom's life in line, right? I'm not going to put my community's life in line. You know, I'm not going to put the environment, immigrant communities, people of color. I'm not going to do that because if we live with this in this passive mentality that things are already in the bag, then I am jeopardizing the future of my people. And I am not about that. So I communicate that every single morning meeting, every single field call, every single coaching conversation, every time a numbers dip, I say, hey, people, this is what is at stake. And I keep bringing them back to that because sometimes we become little machines and we are all about, you know, just knocking, just calling, just reporting, when in reality, we forget the bigger picture. So as leaders in the campaign, as campaigners, our job is to be the fuel of the campaign. And on a daily basis, genuinely, we have to communicate the urgency of why this campaign matters. So it kind of spreads around the campaign office. Also, it's important to find voices outside of mine. You know, I would sometimes find a person that they know they admired, the candidate, it's himself or herself, a person who is a big supporter of our organization. And I would get them on the phone and tell them, hey, can you just give them a strong message? Because our people are tired. We're working 7 days a week. We're hearing crappy stuff on the news. Volunteers cancel on us. So it is, you know, critical for us to keep our spirits up. And it's just the job of our campaign leadership to do that.
Trevor, do you have anything else?
I don't think so.
Well, thank you so much. This was a wonderful presentation, and I'm really glad that you sort of ended things bringing it to that personal note and just thinking about everything that's at stake. So to my candidates out there, go fight win.
Yes, thank you.